I think it's now 4.8 to 5 hours a day we spend on our phones on average. It's way, way too much.
In lockdown, I just did a recent video about how to not be a degenerate. And it's basically me talking to the camera, going through what I was like 5 years ago versus now. And I was racking up 10, 15 hours of screen time a day. Wow. And I remember in sixth form, like friends showing me their screen time, and it was like 14, 16 hours. And it was just crazy. And
yeah,
also the nature thing and the walking thing, when I was going through that era of bad habits as a 15, 16 year old, that was also the same time I got my camera and started going out again in nature with my camera. And I've always been obsessed with kind of birds and listening to bird sounds. And I always feel much better after doing that. And it's something I need to keep doing nowadays because I've been doing it less. I've been walking a lot to and from places, but with like earphones in, listening to podcasts. Are you saying that kind of doesn't count as rest, even if it's in an urban environment?
The walking is still going to be really good for your default network and your brain overall, because you're getting those myokines, and walking is just, it's really good for your brain anyway, for lots of other neurological reasons. In terms of activating your default network, your resting brain, like, it's still going to be providing benefits for sure, but not as many as if you were like in nature. Because a lot of the studies that looked at this, they compare people basically walking down urban environments versus being in a green space. It doesn't even need to be nature. Like, it can be just be like a patch of grass, a small park. And they always find that it's when you're in green space that you get even more cognitive benefits. And it's regardless of the weather. Like, even if it's like really sunny when you're wandering like down in a city, London or something, you're still better off being in a park. And the really interesting thing is that when they do a lot of these fMRI studies looking at this, even an image of nature, of a green space, even like a virtual representation of green space, has an impact, has the beneficial impact on your default network and your brain versus the city. So your brain instinctively craves nature. And that kind of, it makes sense, right? Because we haven't evolved for the dense, chronic urban existences, the existence that we have. But in terms of the audiobook, again, if you're enjoying it and you find that it doesn't feel like a cognitively demanding task, a task that you need to really cognitively lean into, then it will be activating your default network. So yeah, I quite like anything that can get people walking more, get people hanging out in green spaces more. Like, if you need to listen to something while you do that, then that's fine. You're still going to be getting loads of benefits.
And you're talking about the work thing and not trying to work on weekends and stuff like that. What happens if what you do for work is what you thoroughly enjoy? If you're in that lucky position, I guess that's still activating the non-default network, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I say in the book, like, I'm not anti-productivity and I'm not anti-work. I do work quite hard myself. So I don't work as hard as I used to. I used to grind out 12-hour days, and then I was just burning myself out. But I still work very hard, and I'm still very pro-productivity. But all of this research shows that it's basically long-term productivity increases when you rest and activate your default network. And that, so we're basically living in a system where we're prioritizing short-term productivity with this sort of hustle mentality, this like the gig economy, this idea that just grinding and working really hard is the sort of key to a good life. But some people do work really hard. Like you said, they work on weekends. Some people are lucky enough to have a job that they find really fulfilling and they just want to do it all the time. And that's great. That's great. What I would say to those people is, it's still really important for you to get downtime, activate your brain's default network, because you'll perform even better at the job you're doing if you do that. And it's a mindset shift for sure, because people think that the brain is powering down. They don't think of it like there are all these cognitive benefits that are coming to me. And that really is just the result of bad programming over the last couple of hundred years, basically, of just being told that you just have to hunker down and get on with it. So it's just important to try and show people what's happening in the brain when they rest. Your brain is doing a hell of a lot of something when you think you're doing nothing. And this whole notion of work and rest being in opposition to each other that's the thing that is basically making people work really hard. And in terms of working hard, like the statistics on it now are really quite grim. So globally, we now know that overwork leads to 745,000 deaths a year. And that's a 29% increase since 2000. 3 in 5 employees now report a lack of interest, motivation, and energy. That's a 38% increase since 2019. So even though working conditions are better today than they are in the past, there's no doubt about that. Like, we are in a dramatic regression in terms of overwork and burnouts. And as I say in the book, like, overwork has really bad like impacts on the brain. So one of the things it does is it thins the frontal cortex. In the frontal cortex, the part of your brain in the frontal lobe, really important for all your higher faculties, like attention, decision-making, your memory, all these things. It thins the frontal cortex in the same way that aging does. It literally makes the brain older than it is. And it does that by basically stripping away the dendrites, the neurons like branch-like projections that are really important for connecting with other neurons. And then it does a bunch of other stuff as well in the brain. So like when you overwork, your hippocampus shrinks. That's a region really important for learning and memory. Your amygdala enlarges. That's a region that we know is really important for the fight and flight response. So there's a reason why you feel like anxious and on edge a lot of the time when you're in that state of overwork. And I think a lot of people who, even when they say they really enjoy their work, and that's why they work on the weekends and they work super hard and they hardly take any rest, I think that's why they are often like on edge and feeling anxious. It's one of the main reasons that anxiety levels across the world are skyrocketing, because we're all working too hard. And so I would just say to that person who works super hard on the weekend because they love what they do, that's great, but it's really important to rest the brain. And it's not just about the cognitive benefits of rest, but you also need to think about the really deleterious effects on the brain through overworking. And it's worth mentioning the psychological impact as well. Because whenever I talk about the neurological impact of overwork, it's really interesting, but I think a good way to relate to it is also to talk about the psychology. So we know that basically when you overwork, there are basically like these different phases of overwork that lead to burnout. So the first phase is dissatisfaction. So you know that something's like wrong with like how much you're working, you feel a bit dissatisfied, but it's like a manageable feeling and you just ignore it, right? But that dissatisfaction then shifts into cynicism. And that's basically where you just don't really care about your job anymore. It's just something you've got to do. You've got to do it to earn the money, to carry on in this system of untrammeled capitalism. So you just do it. But that cynicism, if left unchecked, then moves into what psychologists call a period of dehumanization. And that's like a complete emotional hardening. It's a complete severing of emotions from your colleagues, from your friends. And that is what then leads into these feelings of hopelessness and dread. So you just don't want to go to work or do work. Anxiety and depression. And it creates a lingering anxiety and depression. It's really important to say that as well. People who are overworked and at the point of burnout, it's a constant lingering anxiety and depression. You basically wear these feelings like skin, as if they were there all along. And the really interesting thing is that there have been like loads of studies done in Sweden, like longitudinal studies looking at the effects of all this. And they've shown that basically once it sets in, overwork and burnout, it takes up to 3 years for your brain to recover. So for you to return to the baseline, your cognitive baseline in terms of your ability to perform cognitive tasks, it takes up to 3 years, depending on like how bad the overwork and the burnout is. So again, the solution to that is, to get away from the executive network, activate your default network with rest in all these different ways. But it's also to try and get the message across to people who, even if they love what they do, that's great. They still shouldn't be working anywhere near as hard as they probably are. Our brain needs so much more rest than we understand. You know, I've spoken to so many people for this book who basically are like workaholics, and they say they're going to try and get more rest and stuff. But you can tell by the mentality, they still view it as a bit of a luxury, something like indulgent, unprincipled, irresponsible, something that they'll fit into their schedule. And that's just the complete reverse needs to happen, because that's the period where all of the cognitive abilities that you have to perform your work really well and be really productive in the long run, that's where it comes from. It comes from your brain like being more active when you rest. So we need a complete inversion, a complete flip of this false dichotomy between work and rest.